Okay, thank you very much. Thank you. I'd like to thank the organizers for for inviting me to give a plenary talk. Happy to be here. And so today I will talk about black holes in loop quantum gravity. I will present some recent results, most of which are based on papers in collaboration with Amit Ghosh and my student Ernesto Froden, and some of which are in a manuscript that is to appear recently. By the end of the talk, will be about these new results. But of course, what I'm talking about is based on the work of many, many people on the framework of, on the subject of quantum, of black hole entropy in loop quantum gravity. So let me briefly start by reviewing the notions of the basic notions in black hole thermodynamics. So from the Noether theorem, we know that stationary black holes, electrovacuum stationary black holes, are labeled by just a handful of microscopic parameters: the mass, the angular momentum, and the charge. And then on physical grounds, this stationary black holes model the final stages of gravitational collapse. So we expect gravitational collapse is a highly dynamical situation, difficult to describe due to the complexity of general relativity and matter fields coupled to it. But if you wait long enough and matter and energy is radiated to infinity at late times, the situation should be well described by a stationary black hole, and those are labeled by only these three parameters. And this is one of the first intriguing things about black holes, that for a large class of initial conditions, the final result is labeled by only these three numbers. And it's the first thing that makes us think of an analogy with thermodynamics. The analogy with thermodynamics becomes more clear when one looks at particular perturbations of stationary black holes, and one discovers, using Einstein's equations, the so-called laws of black hole mechanics, which are all in analogy with some law in thermodynamics, so they have the same names, the zero law, that says that surface gravity, or the value of the gravitational force close to the horizon as seen from observers at infinity, is uniform, is constant on the horizon. The first law that relates changes in the mass, or the total energy of the space-time, with changes that take the form of work terms, omega times change of angular momentum, static potential times the change of charge. And this intriguing term, which combined with the second law of black hole mechanics, or the Hawking area theorem that says that the area of the black hole can only increase, makes us think of a heat term or an entropy term in the first law. So this analogy became strict with the calculations of Hawking that showed that if one does quantum field theory on a curved background that represents the space-time of gravitational collapse that ends with a late phase here which is represented by a stationary black hole, then when one puts a state of this test field in a vacuum as seen by by early observers which are very far away, idealized by observers at past light infinity, J minus, one puts a vacuum here, and then observers at late times in Sky Plus see an afterglow coming from the black hole of quantum particles with a spectrum which is thermal at the temperature which is given by the surface gravity divided by 2 pi. And now, so this implies that black holes radiate with this temperature, and then if we come back to the first law, then one could use the first law now in strict analogy with thermodynamics to infer the value of an entropy for the black hole, and that is given by the area over 4 in Planck units. So this last step represents a central question to any quantum gravity theory. So how is it that we can understand this entropy in terms of the statistical mechanics of basic or fundamental degrees of freedom? And this is the question I want to address by the end of this talk. But before getting into that, let me revisit the laws of black hole mechanics from a different perspective, from a local perspective. I'm going to show that one can translate the content of the first law in terms of a family of local observers, which are stationary with respect to the horizon at fixed proper distance L. I assume this L is much smaller than the area of the black hole. And when I say they are stationary, I mean that they follow the orbits of the Killing fields. So we are in the background of a stationary black hole. Stationary black holes are stationary and axis symmetric. There is this particular combination of Killing fields which becomes the generators of the horizon at the horizon. So the family of observers are stationary observers in the sense that their four velocity is given by the normalized Killing field, which happens to be time-like outside the horizon. So they are observers which, in a space-time diagram, will look like this. So they are at fixed distance to the horizon, or equivalently, we can say they are at uniform acceleration, which is given by 1 over L. So the idea is to translate the content of the first law in terms of this set of observers, local observers. And in the simplest way to do that, the one I'm going to use in the talk, is to use the thought experiment of throwing into the black hole test particles. So the background of the black hole is given by Kerr-Newman black hole, which is charged. So there is an electromagnetic field. So I'm going to assume that the particle is charged and has charge Q. I'm going to assume that WA is the four velocity of the particle that is in falling. And I am assuming for simplicity that the mass of the particle is unity. So the particle follows this equation of motion, which is the Lorentz force equation of motion, because there are symmetries in the background. There are conserved quantities, E and L, which take this form. These quantities are constant along the particle's trajectory if the particle follows this equation of motion. These constants of motion have a very clear physical interpretation for observers that are inertial. Observers at infinity, because they mean exactly the energy content of the particle and the angular momentum of the particle. And this is because these terms just drop out at infinity due to the asymptotic behavior of the electromagnetic field. So this E and L mean energy and angular momentum for observers at infinity. For the local observers, they measure a local energy of the particle, which is just given by this standard formula. This is the four velocity of the particle, and this is the four velocity of the observers. So if the black hole swallows this particle, then the observers at infinity will, on physical grounds, say the black hole should change its parameters and stabilize to a new stationary situation where the mass has changed in this by this quantity, the angular momentum by this quantity, the charge by this quantity. And then the first law tells us that the constants of motion that we introduced before are directly related to the change of the area in this way through the first law. So I'm going to copy this very same formula up here. And now let's see at what happens with respect to the local observers. The local energy, we said, is given by that, the energy measured by the local observers. This would be the amount of joules that the local observers would measure with the calorimeter if they would put the calorimeter in the way of the particle. So this is the quantity that their system gains in terms of energy according to their energy notion. Now, remember that UA here was given by the normalized Killing field, so a simple calculation shows that the local energy is related to the constants of motion in this way. So, therefore, if I combine what we obtained from the usual first law and the relationship with the local energy, we see that the local energy measured by the observer is directly related to the change in the area. In this formula, we can introduce this kappa bar, which is nothing else but the local value of the surface gravity, namely the blue shifted surface gravity at the position of the local observers. And we see that for these local observers, their system has changed its total energy by the amount E local. And so there, according to them, the energy balance formula, which is in one-to-one correspondence to the first law, the usual first law, is this one. Changes in energy are given by kappa bar times changes in area over 8 pi. Moreover, and this is easy to see intuitively, this kappa bar, the local surface gravity, is a universal quantity that does not depend on the parameters of the black hole. And this is related to the equivalence principle. We are very close to the black hole. These are uniformly accelerated observers. Their acceleration is given by 1 over L, as I said in the previous slide. So this kappa bar is a universal constant. So we can, as long as we are in the context of these infinitesimal changes close to stationary black holes, then we can integrate this quantity to obtain a notion of local energy up to a constant. But again, we can forget about the constant as, because in all these infinitesimal exchanges, it's just a constant. And for state, for thermodynamical or statistical mechanical consideration, we can set this constant to zero, the energy to zero, so that this constant disappears. So there is this from the point of view of these local observers, we have the usual first law, which is interpreted in terms of quantities at infinity for observers which are asymptotic observers, stationary or inertial observers at infinity. And this translated to this local first law for our family of observers with this natural quasi-local notion of energy. Okay, so that concludes this classical detour. Just a few words. We use this notion of test particles this is the simplest way of deriving this, but you can refine the argument and use actually Einstein's equations. And so that you don't need to assume that once the black hole absorbs the particle, then it just, the parameters change, but you can actually solve the dynamics using Einstein's equations. The key is that you're considering small quantity amounts of matter being absorbed, and then you can use linearized gravity, and in particular the Reich-Hadoop equation, to study the dynamics of the horizon, and a simple calculation leads to the same conclusion. But an important thing that you see here, and it might not be clear in the previous derivation, is that this derivation is local in the sense that you don't really need to normalize the Killing fields at infinity. You only need the space-time to be that of a stationary black hole in this near region to be able to achieve this thing, because you don't need to normalize Killing fields at infinity, and this is an important feature that has, from the conceptual point of view. We'll come back to this in the conclusion at the end. Also, this first law has a dynamical interpretation. You can really see the delta of A, if you look at it carefully, corresponds to changes in areas of isolated horizons or apparent horizons. And in a simple example, this is obvious in Bayesian spacetimes, but you can generalize this to more general situations. Okay, what are the implications for the quantum theory? Okay, so if we assume that we've seen that there is this quasi-local notion of energy, which is natural, has physical content for these quasi-local observers, and that this is proportional to the area. The area is one of the most simple observables in general in loop quantum gravity. States of the quantum isolated states of a black hole in loop quantum gravity are represented by spin network states graphs, which carry representations of SU2 that describe the bulk geometry, and they end in punctures of a mathematical surface on which is the horizon surface, on which isolated horizon boundary conditions are imposed. Now, if we take this notion of energy, then we see that we derived in the first part, then we see that, I forgot to say, that the spectrum of the area of the black hole is a very simple operator, which picks up contributions for individual punctures. Each puncture contributes independently. And because of that, the Hamiltonian associated to this notion of local energy that we are using will take this following form. There is the length scale L here that appears. This is the distance to the horizon. It appears as a fiducial length scale. We will see that it disappears from relevant physical quantities later. And so as far as the degrees of freedom on the horizon is concerned, the system is just simply analogous to a standard statistical mechanical system of non-interactive punctures, like a gas of punctures. So, but there is a subtlety that is important and it will be important for what follows. The energy of the horizon can change, the energy which is now proportional to the area, can change in two distinct ways. In one case, one can modify the spins of the different punctures without changing the total number of punctures. And one can show that in the large area eigenvalue limit, this kind of changes become continuous. Another way in which we can make energy change is by the creation or annihilation of punctures. And this, if the quantum state or the thermal state is dominated by low spins, is a fundamentally discrete process because there is an area gap, there is a minimum area or minimum energy eigenvalue, and because the spectrum is nonlinear, if for some reason the quantum state of the thermal equilibrium, which we will describe in a moment, is dominated by low spins, then we should expect a non-trivial chemical potential to appear in the discussion of statistical mechanics. So we are almost ready to do statistical mechanics and compute black hole entropy. So far, we have talked about the state on the boundary, the horizon state. Some information about the bulk is necessary, and ideally, what one would like to do is to describe with these spin networks a semi-classical state which is picked around the geometry of a stationary black hole. In practice, one cannot do this at the moment. Well, one should try to do this, but we are not, this is a hard problem. So instead, we're going to bring in information from the bulk by saying that this system of punctures has to be in thermal equilibrium at a given temperature. And what is the temperature? The temperature that is measured by these local observers, and namely, that is nothing else but Unruh temperature, that is given by 1 over 2 pi L, or the acceleration of the local observers divided by 2 pi. This is related through the Tolman effect to the the temperature, Hawking temperature at infinity. So this is the blue shifted Hawking temperature at the place of the local observers. And we will probably hear in this conference about ways in which this assumption can be weakened by deriving this temperature instead of putting it from the outside. Okay, so the first calculation that I will show you is the one in which we do a pure gravity calculation, and we completely neglect matter degrees of freedoms, and this will become, what that means will become quite clear by the end, I hope. So the calculation now is just a standard textbook calculation of statistical mechanics, except for, well, some important ingredients. One can argue that punctures in these models in which matter is completely neglected must be distinguishable. Namely, these punctures have an identity, they have a name, puncture number 1, number 2, etc. And this introduces this factor in the calculation of the partition function. So the other factor is the degeneracy of the area spectrum, and then the Boltzmann factor that you see here with the energy levels given by our Hamiltonian. So one goes ahead and computes the partition function. From there, one gets the entropy, and the result is the following. One finds that the entropy is equal, the entropy at Unruh temperature, in equilibrium at Unruh temperature, is given by the area over 4 in Planck units, plus this correction, which contains this function sigma of the Emirsi parameter that is given here, times the number of punctures. So this means that there is a non-trivial chemical potential. In fact, the thermodynamical local first law that one derives from the statistical mechanics takes this form in which there is the entropy here and a correction term with the chemical potential and number of punctures. And one can show that this term here is absolutely necessary for, but it comes out automatically from the analysis, for this to be just a rewriting of the usual geometric first law that comes from Einstein's equation. So the geometric first law and the thermodynamic first law that one finds from the statistical mechanical treatment are one and the same thing, but there is now this chemical potential that we advertised before. And we will see that this is also related to the fact that in this pure gravity context, low spin dominate. So there is an equation of state that relates number of punctures with the energy or number of punctures with area that if we use, we get, in fact, an entropy which is proportional to the area with a proportionality factor that is not 1/4. And so everything is in agreement with the second law. So the black hole entropy is proportional to the area. The horizon. The horizon with the isolated horizon boundary conditions. But maybe I'll come back to this at the end if it's not clear what I mean. So, but there is a tension. Entropy is not equal A over 4, and in Planck units, this might, at first sight, is not in sharp contrast with the first law, as we said, because the first law is a classical thing, and it happens to be in agreement with it if we have this chemical potential. But there is a clear tension with other approaches to black hole entropy, in which entropy turns out to be A over 4. For instance, in the Euclidean path integral approaches or Carlip's conformal field theoretical methods and others. So can we eliminate this tension? And we think that we can if we bring in an ingredient that we have forgotten in the previous calculation, which is matter. Because the vacuum in a quantum field is not just an empty page. The vacuum in a quantum field resembles more something like that. So, so if we go back to our assumption that the temperature of local observers measure close to the horizon is this Unruh temperature, we know that that vacuum that can be similar to the Minkowski vacuum for freely falling observers when they cross the horizon is in fact looks like a thermal bath for these stationary observers in terms of which we are doing the calculation, and in this context. The vacuum looks like a very excited state with many degrees of where many degrees of freedom are excited. So, in fact, there are calculations in quantum field theory on curved space times, like in approaches where one tries to explain black hole entropy from matter entanglement or models like the two brick wall model, in which one argues. And one gets at least qualitative information about the contributions of entropy from the matter degrees of freedoms. And in all these approaches, one finds that the entropy of matter, the contribution of entropy, is proportional to the area. They are, however, it's dominated by area contributions when one considers the shell of matter around the horizon. It's ultraviolet divergent, so one has to put a cutoff. This is epsilon here. And then there is an undetermined constant in these calculations due to regularization ambiguities and due to other problems such as the species problem, because this lambda is proportional to the number of fields that we put into the calculation. However, the qualitative message that we should keep from these calculations is that the degeneracy of this matter degrees of freedom I should have corrected this. Grows, I think I made the correction in a different place. Grows exponentially with the area over epsilon squared. Should be epsilon squared here, with an unknown constant. Yeah, of course, I did it in the wrong place. But loop quantum gravity is a finite theory. There are no ultraviolet divergences. So if we take seriously, this lesson from quantum field theory, then in loop quantum gravity, we could make the assumption, which shouldn't be a strong assumption, that the degeneracy of matter fields close to the horizon are dominated by area contributions and that they are not of this form, which should have been in the previous slide, but of this form, namely some constant lambda, which is unknown, area over L Planck square. So the role of the ultraviolet cutoff is now played by the Planck length. I really messed up all these things because, so I'm going to rewrite this assumption. So lambda is an arbitrary, lambda is an arbitrary constant. I'm going to parameterize it in terms in this way. So this lambda now, I parameterize it as 1 minus delta over 4. Delta is still arbitrary, OK? It's just, you'll see, because in a moment, delta will become a small quantity. And now, because in loop quantum gravity, the area is given by the sum of puncture contributions, this exponential growth of the degeneracy associated to matter fields rises in terms of a product over punctures of individual exponential factors for each one of the punctures. Where Sj is the number of punctures that have spin j. It's the occupation number of the spin j. So now we are ready to redo the calculation. But for reasons that will become clear at the end, I'm going to assume instead that punctures are indistinguishable particles, instead of distinguishable as in the pure gravity case. Because punctures are indistinguishable, the partition function takes this very simple form, where you identify the exponentially decaying Boltzmann factor, the beta term, and this exponentially growing factor here comes from this assumption of the degeneracy of matter degrees of freedoms. Remember that the energy depends only on the area. So the matter contributes to the partition function only through this degeneracy that factorizes in each one of the punctures. So it is as if each one of the punctures would be dressed by this matter degrees of freedoms, which I represent by this picture. So we can easily compute this partition function, evaluate it at Unruh temperature, thermal equilibrium at Unruh temperature, and from there get a relationship that tells us what is the mean value of the energy or the mean value of the area, which comes from the standard thermodynamical formulas. If delta is small, which I will prove in a moment, then one can approximate this sum by an integral, but this is by no means essential. And you see that the area is proportional to some factors with 1 upon delta squared. So if you want your black hole to be microscopic and large, then this delta has to be small. In fact, delta has to go, has to be of this form. So the inputs are that the quasi-local Hamiltonian, the loop quantum gravity, quantum geometry, area spectrum, and then a combination of loop quantum gravity ultraviolet finiteness and quantum field theory to postulate that the degeneracy of matter grows exponentially with an unknown factor, plus indistinguishability of punctures. From there, the results are that this delta is quite small. It's a quantum correction. It goes like square root of L Planck square over A, namely matter saturates up to quantum corrections the holographic bound. Entropy happens to be A over 4 plus quantum corrections. So up to quantum corrections, we get Hawking-Bekenstein entropy. Fluctuations of the area are small, while the system is dominated by large spins with large fluctuations. So each puncture, and we'll come back to this in more detail in a moment, is dominated by large spins and with very large fluctuations, while the total area has small fluctuations. Because things are dominated by large spins, then the chemical potential vanishes. Because for large spins, the spectrum of the area becomes linear, and I can cut a single puncture into two without any extra energy cost. And so chemical potential vanishes. More precisely, and what is happening here? So this is the partition function that we are computing. Without matter, low spins dominate. And this is the probability distribution for J at a given puncture that everybody knows. So it's dominated by low spins. With matter, low spins are still the most likely configurations. But this distribution is very flat in this direction. So when you compute the expectation value of J, you get a large value of the expectation value of J. How do we understand this? It's very easy. Look at this partition function. There is something like an effective beta tilde, which is the actual beta, the inverse temperature, minus this correction that comes from the degeneracy assumption. This beta tilde is very, very close to zero. It's much, much smaller than one. So if in analogy with some standard thermodynamical system, what is happening is that we are as if we were at infinite temperature. And therefore, all different values of J are excited. In fact, in the limit where delta becomes zero, which is in the large area limit, this distribution becomes flat and zero because it has to be normalized. So we are, in fact, exactly in the regime of semi-classical and the low energy and semi-classical regime that has been studied in the canonical approach of loop quantum gravity and also in the spin form formulation that you will hear about from Mushin. In fact, from this mean value of J, we can construct an area, mean area associated to a puncture, and we see that this mean area is much, much larger than the Planck length, which is the semi-classical regime in the usual analysis, but much, much smaller than the curvature radius close to the horizon, which is here given by the area, curvature radius squared, which is an indication of low energy, of the low energy limit. We are exactly in this, in the right regime that people have been trying to define for semi-classical, in the study of semi-classical and low energy limit of quantum gravity. And this happens here automatically, dynamically, from the assumption of this degeneracy of the matter, degrees of freedoms, that again, is natural from quantum field theory and curved spacetimes. So can we get a more explicit manifestation of the fact that we are in the semi-classical regime? And we think we can. And an indication of that is this. If you just look at the computation of the partition function that we have obtained, ignoring these quantum corrections, so and this is the approximate sign here, the partition function takes this form where the 2 pi L here comes from the degeneracy assumption of matter degrees of freedoms. But this is exactly what one would call a discretization of, namely, something that would give meaning to the formal continuous Euclidean path integral partition function that one obtains from continuous methods. So we see here that our statistical mechanical partition function coincides with the Euclidean partition function obtained in other methods. So this is a manifestation, again, of this semi-classical correspondence. So in conclusion, so on the classical side, this quasi-local approach captures relevant physics for black hole thermodynamics, and it is complementary. It goes hand in hand with the isolated horizon framework. It provides an effective energy notion proportional to the horizon area, and it holds for stationary black holes that are not necessarily asymptotically flat because we don't need to normalize Killing fields. This energy notion can be used in statistical mechanical description of the quantum horizon degrees of freedom. And if one does so, when one neglects matter contributions in terms of a degeneracy, then the degeneracy of the area spectrum itself implies that things are dominated by low spins. Punctures must be taken as distinguishable. Entropy turns out to be given by a formula like this, where there is an important term proportional to the number of punctures due to the presence of a non-vanishing chemical potential, which is physically reasonable because we are in low spins and the area gap, it's very important in this regime. However, we don't have a clear understanding of semi-classical correspondence beyond the fact that this entropy is in agreement with the first law, as I explained at the beginning. If we include the degeneracy coming from matter degrees of freedom with an arbitrary lambda, then we get immediately large spin dominance. And this is intuitive because we have this, for large spins, we have a big phase space that is calling to be occupied by thermal fluctuations. And so spins tend to go to large spins. And assuming that punctures are distinguishable then up to small quantum corrections, lambda is 1/4. Of course, this is wrong. There shouldn't be a 4 there, so that lambda, but that's, so that ignore this 4 there. So then lambda is 1/4, namely matter degrees of freedom saturate the holographic bound. So this is giving a solution of, I mean, this is a strict statement of this treatment in which there are no ambiguities, no regularization ambiguities because there are no ultraviolet divergences and there are no species problem. The entropy is equal to 1/4 of the area, and we are in the regime of semi-classicality with the vanishing chemical potential. Because the chemical potential is vanishing, then this answers the question that we discussed a lot with Lee when we were starting to talk about this chemical potential. So this chemical potential, we would like it to be zero, so the number of punctures is not really an observable. We don't know what the number of punctures is from the Cartesian point of view, and this is showing that in this regime, this is indeed the case, and I represent this by this picture. The punctures get blurred. These conclusions are independent of the quantum statistics. So the important thing is the indistinguishability of punctures. So the calculations I did, I forgot to mention, were made in terms of bosonic or fermionic statistics. But this is not essential as far as the leading order of the corrections is concerned. And the reason is that this beta tilde would really plays the role of inverse temperature, inverse effective temperature. It's very close to zero. Therefore, we are in the very high temperature, effective temperature regime, where all statistics give the same result, at least for the leading corrections. Now, if we try to use distinguishable particles, then things don't turn out right. And first of all, lambda is not equal to 1/4, but one could say, OK, but who says that matter should saturate the holographic bound. But also entropy turns out to be different from area over 4 with a different factor, which is far from 1/4. And this now is a problem because we are still in the large spin domination where mu is equal to 0. And so we don't have the possibility we had in the model at the beginning where we excluded matter. We didn't get entropy equal A over 4, but we had a chemical potential that made things right. Okay. So that's essentially everything I wanted to tell you. Let me finish by just a short outlook. I think it would be very interesting to have a microscopic understanding of this holographic bound. Here we have just borrowed it from quantum field theories and replaced the cutoff by the physical cutoff and a constant which is unknown and determined at the end by the simple requirement that black holes should be microscopic. It would be nice to, and maybe one should come back to studying this issue of semi-classical states coupled with matter that were studied a lot some time ago. But now in this very precise context of black holes, because this can teach us maybe important lessons about how to recover this continuum limit of the theory. Another thing that I want to mention very briefly, is that the Chern-Simons formulation of the horizon opens a door, apparently, for having a microscopic description of this huge degeneracy. But for the moment, this is a rather speculative thing. It's a coincidence that we have observed. I mean, it's very important to use this Chern-Simons formulation of the horizon that has been there for a while, introduced a long time ago by Lee, and Kirill later, and has been evolving since then until recently. And now there is this observation that if one does a certain analytic continuation in which one replaces J, the spin J's, by these complex quantities, which have a clear interpretation in, as self-dual representation satisfying reality conditions of the form that the fluxes square are positive quantities. If one does this exercise, one obtains that the degeneracy due to the dimensionality of the Hilbert space of Chern-Simons theory turns out to be holographic. Namely, it has a form that for large eigenvalues goes exactly like exponential of the area over 4. But this is, as I said, at the speculative stage until we understand better what it means. In terms of underlying quantum theory, well, we need to know whether it makes sense to quantize the theory in terms of complex variables and whether this formal step that we do here really makes sense in a global, in a larger framework. So so we conclude by citing Tuft that one has to attribute the black hole not only the space-time metric itself, the black hole entropy, but also to the quantized fields present there. In short, the black hole includes the entropy of the quantized fields in its neighborhood. I think this perspective might be very productive for us, as these initial results seem to suggest. And so I thank you very much for your attention.
This is great. This is very clear, wonderful. I think it's. Let me ask a question. In fact, a double question related to the connection with what you have understood here, with something else. One is that you have this equation you started from, which is the entropy is A over 4 plus log Z, right? And this log Z term depends on gamma, on the Mietze parameter. And I think, if I understand correctly, something you have not said is that it's all over your slide. Yeah, here, for instance. Log Z depend on gamma if you do not consider, if you just, before you added matter. Mm-hmm. So I think something you have not said is that if you tune gamma to the value, to the appropriate value, this disappears.
Yes.
And that was the sort of the previous, the lot of calculation in that. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, you're saying choosing the Mietze parameter at that particular value, it's an effective way for, without thinking about matter accounting of something else. And I just say the choice of parameter of gamma in reality is hiding the effect of matter. In this. That's one. And on the other hand, you say, well, the effect, this effect of matter, you bring it in and you say, I have to get from matter quantum field theory and from the UNU temperature, some information about that, which you use to say mm-hmm. how many, what is the degeneracy of this state. So you're shifting the problem in two steps, in a sense, from why the Mietze parameter is that particular value to look, this is just has to do with the degeneracy of the matter, this has to do with the UNU temperature instead. And you're not yet giving a full, complete story. Sort of from first principle up to derive this degeneracy. So that's what you're leaving. Is that a fair account
right.
of what you're saying?
So the only assumption is that this degeneracy grows exponentially with some factor.
Yes.
And then consistency, namely the requirement
yes,
that the black
exactly.
holes are big, forces this coefficient to be 1/4.
Okay, thank you.
So the assumption is just the qualitative form of this degeneracy, not the precise.
I think Carlo just asked my question, but maybe I'll ask it in my way. And
okay.
Hi. So one would expect that the result for the black hole entropy would depend on the Mietze parameter if one interprets it as setting the scale of the discreteness in the theory, so that as the discreteness scale gets smaller and smaller, the black hole entropy should increase. But that's, I mean, your result is just, there's no sign of the Mietze parameter in your result. It's just the Planck length.
So
I think I'm just asking Carlo's question, but
if you don't consider matter, then what you're saying is correct. But when you put this degeneracy factors as suggested from the matter side, then the dependence of the Mietze parameter completely disappears. From the, except for the subleading corrections, it's still there in the correction terms. For example, okay. So it's the leading order that does not depend on the Mietze parameter, and the quantum corrections do depend on it.
Two more questions.
Hi, Ali. I have a question. I think it's related to the both two. So. There seems to be two different, there was two different parts of your talk. So the first part of your talk, okay, when you assume distinguishability of the observer, and if you want to get the 1/4, so it was noted, you have to have this non-zero chemical potential. So now the puzzle of that picture, this is a standard picture,
no,
right?
You get the non-zero chemical potential, and you don't get, this is the general result that depends on the Mietze parameter.
Okay. So
you don't get
depends.
1/4.
Okay, good.
You could get 1/4 if you happen to tune gamma.
Yeah,
to tune the
chemical potential. So I agree. Here, what I like about that is that if you assume that this is, you know, what's going on, it's true that you have two quantum numbers in the theory. One is n, the number of mm-hmm. punctures, the other mm-hmm. is the area. And
That's
then
right.
you can ask, what is this n? And then the question is, well, is there, if this mu dn is there, there should be a classical observable
yes.
that represent mu dn. Okay. And what is it? Okay. That's the first question. But the second thing, the puzzle here is that all these computations, as you know very well, they have nothing to do with black hole, right? Any space-time region, as we describe it in a spin network state, will be described in that manner.
No.
There's no
not completely.
There's no dynamical implementation of any...
The dynamics comes here through the assumption that the system is in a thermal equilibrium at Uru temperature.
These local observers testing
this temperature is a statement about the near horizon geometry, which we bring in classically, if you want.
Yeah, I think
it's saying that this is not anything, but this is a black hole horizon.
I guess. Well, here you're bringing lots of stuff which is not part of the computation.
Not lots of stuff.
It's not a criticism of you. I'm just saying this is a state of the field. The state of the field is that we have the stuff.
These are the things.
I think what I'm first saying is absolutely standard law. It has nothing to do with what you particularly say. We know that when we count that state, I can count the number of punctures around any area. It's a big puzzle in the field. There is no description at the quantum level that this is a black hole state. I mean,
if you just count states, I would agree.
Yeah,
but once you say my system has to be in thermal equilibrium,
at Uru temperature,
you're saying more.
What?
Once you introduce the temperature, then you're saying more. And this is not only something that happens here. In other approaches, it happens also. When you choose the period in Euclidean time, in Euclidean calculations to be 2 pi, you're doing this.
I haven't asked my question, but I'm sorry. I haven't asked my question. I was saying something standard. I guess I'll wait later for my question. I mean, I'm sorry, Alessandro, but I think I totally disagree with this picture. I thought we agreed, but I totally disagree.
No, we do agree.
Tonight to discuss this.
We do agree, but it's... I agree with that. And I said that. We don't... I agree. Yeah. But let me just say something about your first comment. The number of punctures is an important observable as long as the chemical potential doesn't vanish. And when you bring in this large degeneracy, the chemical potential vanishes and is... You're in a situation similar to photons in a box, where the number of photons does not play any role in the thermodynamics.
Very quick, and it's a yes-no question. If we could observe a small black hole radiating and see the details of the departures from thermality in the spectrum, could we test this idea that the large spin fluctuations regime dominates rather than small spin fluctuations?
Yes, maybe, but the problem is that I'm not sure if one can trust any of this when the black holes are, when these things are large. So all this makes sense for microscopic.
But 10 to the 15 grams, a primordial black hole evaporating.
Black hole evaporating now. Sort of with 10 to the 15 grams is not in the Planck regime, is happening in the semi-classical regime, but has temperatures in the GeV range that we could observe in the sky if we could have one, so lucky as to come near us.
Yes, I'm not sure how one would test these things, because one will have to... The departures from things that we expect classically we will have to measure these quantum corrections to test the...
Right, so one more argument for the panel discussion tonight. Let's thank Alejandro again.